From Nevada Public Radio, I'm Joe Shaneman. It's State of Nevada. Even though it still gets over 100 degrees, and forecasters say it's going to stay there for another week or so, right now we're all sort of breathing a sigh of relief because the summer's awful heat seems to be over. How bad was it? Even those who were born and bred here weren't doing their usual boasting about how this heat was nothing and reminiscing about childhoods without air conditioning or nothing but swamp coolers, etc., etc. This summer was something altogether different. It was really starting to break people. And then there was this news a few weeks ago. Las Vegas would again have to cut back on its use of the Colorado River, even though it already has the smallest share of water out of seven states who use the river. And it's made us all wonder about our water supply. We can have all the billion-dollar casinos we want, but without a steady supply of water, Las Vegas really wouldn't exist, or it would exist on a much, much smaller scale. But is that even a potential future? Will the seven states get their act together and come up with enough river cuts that we can stop worrying for a while? John Ensminger has some answers to those questions. He's the head of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. Also with us, Alex Hager, who covers the river for public radio station KUNC in Northern Colorado. John and Alex, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Good to be here.
Alex, I'm going to start with you. You know, it wouldn't be summer if we didn't see some cuts triggered by low Lake Mead water levels. Southern Nevada saw a 7% cut this time. What about other states? Are they going to be feeling it at all? Are there any cuts anywhere else?
There are cuts elsewhere. This is a kind of standard matter of practice for the federal authorities that manage these reservoirs. We've seen it for the last few summers. Some of these cuts that were agreed upon by the states before things got this bad. Arizona is also going to see some of its water cut, 18% of its total Colorado River allocation. And also Mexico will see some of its water cut. There's some farms in northern Mexico that also draw from the Colorado River.
18%. Why such a high percent there in Arizona?
You know, it all has to do with the order of priority. The Western water system is managed on a system where the first people to use it will be the last to lose it in times of shortage. And Arizona, a lot of its Colorado River water is at the end of the line. They were last in, first out, you could say. And just part of the longstanding agreement is that the folks who use Colorado River water in Arizona will be among the first to lose it. And that has given them the ability to plan for those shortages. So these shortages sound fairly drastic, but if you talk to leaders in those states, and I'm sure John Ensminger will have plenty to say about this, there has been quite a bit of advanced planning to soften the blow of the reduced water allocation.
One question with this. Last year, we had what we'll call a strong water year. I never used to hear those words when I first moved here 27 years ago, but now I do, we hear strong water year. This year was not as strong, but still considered pretty good. Why weren't those enough to offset these cuts?
Well, the water cuts get triggered by levels of water elevation in major reservoirs. And so the fact that we are seeing cutbacks issued is not something that has to do with one year's winter, but has to do with the cumulative effects of a lot of recent winters. And basically, you know, these major reservoirs, Lake Powell and Lake Mead, which are the ones that store the majority of Colorado River water for the states that use it, they would need to see many consecutive strong winters to have their water levels significantly boosted. And because of that, you know, we're kind of behind the eight ball. We've had more than two decades of dry conditions, and to significantly turn around the amount of water in those major reservoirs, we'd need to see, you know, four, five, six really strong winters in a row. So just one heavy snow year in the mountains of Colorado, Utah, and Wyoming is going to help lift some pressure off the shoulders of our decision makers, but it is not going to significantly change the amount of stored water we have mm-hmm. in the nation's two largest reservoirs.
Yeah, and there are some discrepancies, or I would say disputes, in the way that we determine if we have enough water in the Colorado River, like you said, using the levels of Lake Mead and Lake Powell. Some groups are saying it should be different. We're going to get into that in a minute. But Alex, you know, one of the most significant efforts to curb the use of Colorado River was through the Inflation Reduction Act The federal government paid farmers in the Imperial Valley in California about $500 million to stop using some of their water. Has that been a success in any way?
You know, we will be able to find out how successful it's been in a few years when we start to see the impact of that water that is getting kind of temporarily left behind in reservoirs and not put on farms. But I think the idea that federal officials are sending money to the single largest water user in the entire Southwest is valuable. The Imperial Irrigation District uses more water than any other city, than any other farm district between Wyoming and San Diego. And basically, that has left IID with a big target on its back. You have a lot of people looking to save water saying, if we are going to use less of the Colorado River, we need to start with its biggest user. So it is not a surprise that that much money is going to the Imperial Irrigation District. But it is not permanent. It is temporary pauses on water use in a way that will definitely help the major reservoirs. It will definitely help policymakers kind of find the time and the space to negotiate maybe a longer term deal, but it is decidedly temporary. And it also is worth mentioning that there's some folks who say there could be some kind of downstream negative consequences of pausing this much water use on those farm fields. The Imperial Irrigation District comes right up against the Salton Sea, which is a giant kind of inland lake that is created. Excuse me, that is created by Colorado River water and mostly holds agricultural runoff these days. So if you have less water going on fields, you have less runoff into that giant salty lake. And as a result, it's get exposing a lot of desert floor and creating a lot of dust that gets kicked up and is causing a lot of health problems for folks who live around there. So it is a noble conservation effort, I would say, but it does seem like there are some folks saying, unless there's also money to tamp down some of the negative effects of that conservation work, it's not whole, that effort.
Again, we are talking about our water supply with Colorado River reporter Alex Hager and John Ensminger, general manager of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. And John, I'm going to give you the speculative question, but really for a quick answer, and there's no way this would ever happen because the ag in California is much too valuable for the rest of this country. But if they stopped all agricultural production in California, would we all be fine?
It would certainly get the Colorado River into equilibrium, but as you say, that's not really a realistic scenario.
Okay.
But, you know, just to give the listeners the context, you know, on the Colorado River, about 80% of the water goes to agricultural production and 20% goes to cities. So if you're going to have conservation, if you're going to reduce water uses to basically live within the means of what the river is giving us in the 21st century, agriculture has to participate. But I don't believe that means, you know, permanently taking large swaths of agriculture out of production. I think it means having much more efficient irrigation practices.
Well, let's talk about the 7% cuts that were announced just a couple of weeks ago. How impactful is that in Southern Nevada? I'm going to preface this by saying we keep hearing the Southern Nevada saying it's nothing. We're already doing so good with conservation, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, the first thing the audience needs to understand is when you talk about cuts, when you talk about shortage declarations, you're not talking about actually having to reduce the amount of water you're using today. You're talking about a legal definition of saying Nevada's basic allocation is 300,000 acre feet. Under the shortage declaration from a couple weeks ago, that is reduced to 275,000 acre feet. We used 187,000 acre feet last year. So we still have significant extra water that we can put into our banks and use in future years.
Compared to decades past, water flows in the river are down some 20%. Climate experts say it could decline another 20% by 2050, another 30% by 2100 or 2100. The Southern Nevada Water Authority has said that despite growth, our water consumption has dropped again due to conservation. Where are we seeing the biggest returns in conservation? There are several things that the Water Authority oversees, but where are the biggest returns on that?
The biggest returns are water smart landscape program, you know, taking out non-functional turf, installing desert-friendly landscaping. But I really hesitate to, you know, identify, the big ticket items, because conservation really is, you know, all the above approach. You know, I tell people constantly, when it comes to water conservation, there's no silver bullet, but there is silver buckshot. So every single pellet of buckshot, be it, you know, prohibiting installation of new grass anywhere except schools and parks, the moratorium on evaporative cooling, you know, limiting pool sizes, you know, everything that we've implemented uniformly across jurisdictions in this community is required in order for us to meet our conservation goals.
There are a couple of things you've said in the past I want to bring up. One, you said, you know, you don't like to think of us in a drought. This is just the way it is from now on. Another thing you've said is that we can't conserve our way out of this. I wonder if that's just a perspective for Nevada or for all seven states. I mean, if other states did what Southern Nevada is doing, would we be fine with the river flow? I mean, would we have many, many more years to work our way out of this?
Well, I hesitate always to sort of try to export the Southern Nevada model into other communities.
Why?
Because every community has to make their own decisions.
Okay.
And some communities have multiple water supplies. And certainly, as I mentioned, with the 80-20 split in agriculture, what we've done in Southern Nevada doesn't have any real, you know, merit in terms of looking at agricultural conservation.
True.
You know, those are going to be their own separate programs. But if you look at, you know, over the last, you know, 23 years, we've added about 800,000 new residents to Southern Nevada and reduced our water consumption by 46%. So if every community, regardless of what tools they use, could do something approximately along those lines, then yeah, absolutely. The river would be much healthier. We'd have plenty of water for our towns and our farms and our environment.
You and the six other water leaders in the other states that use the Colorado River are inching toward the end of the current Colorado River Compact. Weeks ago, the lead negotiator in Colorado, Becky Mitchell, had said essentially they don't have to cut any of their water use. It's all up to the Southern River users. What's behind that thinking? I wonder if you think that's tactical, you know, going in and saying something very extreme, knowing you're going to have to come back from it.
Well, I think the rationale in the Upper Basin is they historically haven't used their full legal entitlement. You know, under the 1922 compact, those four states got 7.5 million acre feet. I think their high water use ever in a single year is probably about 5 million acre feet. So I think their thinking is we you know, haven't been part of this problem. But I do think that ignores the fact that really to balance the entire system. You're talking about seven states, two countries, 40 million Americans, 30 Native American tribes. Everybody's going to have to use less water. So I understand sort of the negotiating, you know, position, but I do believe in order to, frankly, keep this out of the courts, keep this out of Congress, if the seven states are going to reach a deal, it's going to require shared sacrifice by all seven states.
We've talked several times, John, on this program about working with the six other states, about coming to some sort of deal. Sometimes I think I'm sure people who listen to this program lose hope that there will be a deal that's amenable to everybody. I want your perspective on, I want to know what it's like behind the scenes when you're in these meetings. Are people pounding on the desks? Has it become less amicable? Is it more tense now? I mean, what's happening?
I guess what I would say is it's always been tense. There's always been yelling. You know, I've been negotiating on this river since 2001, and getting the quantification settlement agreement across the finish line, getting the 2007 guidelines across the finish line, getting the 2019 drought contingency plan through Congress, 535-0, by the way. We're always on the verge of failure. We're always tense and yelling at each other right up until we get the deal done. So I can't give, you know, anyone any guarantees. I don't have a better crystal ball than anybody else. But what I would say is, when you read the press, when you hear sort of the antagonistic tone of some of these things, that's totally normal for how river negotiations have gone throughout the 21st century.
Alex, you know, I think, all of the leaders of the different states who are overseeing and leading these water discussions. What are some of the sources of contention here? What are the top two, I guess, points of contention in when they make these discussions?
Well, you had mentioned this before, but kind of the long-standing tension between the states is this sort of rivalry between the upper basin and the lower basin. And it's not just sort of a rivalry for rivalry's sake. There are some big ideological differences, philosophical differences about how the river should be managed and used. And so one of the major sticking points that kind of drove what you were talking about before, where the upper basin has dug in its heels a little bit on its current stance, is that the upper basin says we have sort of a different reality with how we have to use water in these four states. That's Colorado, Wyoming, Utah, and Nevada. And what they say is we are legally obligated to send a certain amount of water down to our lower basin neighbors every year. However, we only get the water that Mother Nature delivers us every year. And because of climate change, Mother Nature is delivering us less. So we are seeing less supply enter the system, but because of longstanding legal agreements, we have the same obligation to deliver that set amount of water to California, Arizona, and Nevada. And they're saying that needs to change. The lower basin states obviously disagree with that and say that it is written into law that that does not need to change. But the upper basin states counter back and say, we think that there is a legal loophole that will allow us to send less water down. Not only are there kind of differences in where these states are located and the types of ways that they use their water, but there are kind of entirely different interpretations of the law and really entirely different philosophies for how the law should be read that are kind of driving a wedge between these two groups.
Okay. Yeah, and John Ensminger, moments ago we talked about the $500 million that the federal government is paying farmers in California in the Imperial Valley not to plant some crops to save water. That is not sustainable. You can't keep doing that or growing that amount every year, the amount of money. So what are some of the ideas out there for, let's just say, the lower basin states, let's just say California, to help to alleviate this problem?
Well, in March, the lower basin states submitted a proposal to the federal government as part of the ongoing NEPA process to come up with the new guidelines post-2026. And that March proposal more or less said the lower basin has a plan to permanently reduce our uses by 1.5 million acre feet. Mm-hmm. And that's about 760 in Arizona, 400,000 in California, 50,000 here in Nevada, and 250,000 in Mexico. So under 80-85% of the future modeling projections, that 1.5 million gets the river into equilibrium. The real rub is if it's worse than that, right? Because in the 20th century, the Colorado River averaged about 15 million acre feet of water per year. If the lower basin could reduce by that 1.5 million acre feet every year, that takes care of us down to a river flow of about 12 million acre feet. But as Alex said, you've got some world-class climate scientists, running around out there saying by mid-century, the river might be 10, 11, 9. And it's that increment, right? It's that ability politically, legally, to negotiate across seven states for that kind of those worst case scenarios of where the negotiations get really, really rocky.
Yeah, so the lower basin states think they can make these reductions of 1.5 million acre feet?
That is the plan that the three governor's representatives signed and submitted to the federal government in March.
And the upper basin states say, great, we love this?
The upper basin states submitted their own plan that has some things we disagree with.
They want greater cuts? Or what do you disagree with?
It gets, not to get too granular, but you're talking about what is the trigger for shortages. We're basing, just as an example, the lower basin states base the trigger for when shortages occur on what we call total system content. So we look at all of the water in every reservoir on the river, and based upon percentages, that's when we make our reductions. The upper basin states want to base that just upon the contents of Lake Mead and Lake Powell. So I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole, but there are operational differences within the two proposals.
Okay. It's really interesting. Actually, environmental groups do like the idea of using the eight reservoirs that are on the Colorado River to make these designations to make these announcements. So they do go along with that. They also want to factor in soil moisture. They want to consider fish habitats and water releases from Mexico, where the river used to reach the Pacific Ocean. Do you like any of those other ideas?
I think they're all good ideas. The question is, how many things are you trying to squeeze into this one NEPA process? Because, again, not to nerd out too much, but, the National Environmental Policy Act is triggered for environmental analysis based upon what is the major federal action. And in this case, the major federal action is operation of the reservoirs on the Colorado River and implementation of shortages on the Colorado River. So there are parallel activities, tribal settlements, forest health, that absolutely have to be addressed. But if you try to put all of that into one single NEPA document, you're not going to get across the finish line.
Our email is son@knpr.org, and we have this message from Jeff in Las Vegas, who says, my issue right now is that Governor Joe Lombardo wants to turn federal land into state land, but the state can't afford to maintain that land. They'll likely sell it to private interests, and we don't have enough water for that land. State lawmakers often draft bills when they're going into the next session. The next session is in 2025. In the past, John, the Southern Nevada Water Authority has supported measures such as banning the use of water for non-functional turf. Is SNWA working on anything else that's going to be coming up next year?
We do not have any bill draft requests at this moment.
John, in 2022, one of Southern Nevada's straws into Lake Mead dried up. That means it wasn't underwater anymore. It was just sucking air. Doesn't work anymore. But we have two more straws. One's sort of at the bottom of the lake. I've also heard there is another straw in the lake or another pipeline. It's called the Horizon Lateral. What is it? What's that supposed to do?
Okay, so the Horizon Lateral is not in Lake Mead.
Okay.
Right now, once we pump water out of the lake, once we treat it at our two big treatment facilities, there are four major what we call laterals that go across the valley. And these are 10 to 12 foot diameter pipelines that take water, all the way to the Strip, all the way to, to Henderson, up into North Las Vegas. And about 40% of our customers are on what's known as the South Valley Lateral, right? So that's all of Henderson. That's the southwest portion of unincorporated Clark County. And it's a single pipe. It's not looped into the rest of our system. So the Horizon Lateral would be a second lateral from our treatment facilities across the southern portion of the valley to give us the redundancy that if we have to shut down the South Valley Lateral, we'll still be able to keep that 40% of our customers in water.
Yeah, politicians are gearing up for the election this fall. They're talking about the economy and growth. You've just mentioned that we are using much less than of the Colorado River water than we are allotted, even though we've grown by 800,000 people over the several years. Do you think growth is a big issue here? Is it something that you and your team is considering, that maybe we have to slow this growth?
Well, first and foremost, the Southern Nevada Water Authority is not a growth control
agency. You don't
have
power over it. I know that.
We do not have jurisdiction. And frankly, I've worked at SNWA for 25 years. And in that time, we've had, 900,000 people move to this valley. Not a single one of them has ever picked up the phone and called us and asked us if we had enough water. There are, Commerce Clause issues. There are things in our, national laws that would make it incredibly difficult to just keep people from moving here. All that being said, that is why we, you know, for our piece of it, for water planning purposes, we do a 50-year resource plan every single year. Every January, our board is going to adopt a new resource plan. They'll do it this January, and we'll have a resource plan that shows that we have sufficient water supplies through 2075 to meet that growth. Because we don't, whether there's a lands bill, whether federal land becomes state land, none of that stuff factors into our planning because we do a population-based plan.
We have less than a minute to go. When you do that, do you consider a slice in time now, or do you consider what's expected in populations over the next 50 years?
Yeah, we do we use the Center for Business and Economic Research model from UNLV, and that shows by in the next 50 years having about 3.7 million people in Southern Nevada, and we then plan to make sure we have sufficient water resources combined with our conservation plan to take care of that population growth.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up there. John Ansminger is the head of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. Alex Hager covers the Colorado River for KUNC, an NPR member station in Northern Colorado. John and Alex, thank you both.
Thank you for having me.